No, I'm not for sale.
Welcome back to the Stampede Blue Colts Cast, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Matt Dainley. Thank you guys for joining me here today. You know, we're in the bye week. We've had a couple shows already this week. And, you know, it's kind of the transition period where we see what we've got, what the Colts have accomplished in the first part of the season. We're looking forward to the second part of the season. And there's really, you know, a lot of questions that need to be answered. There's a lot of situations, and everything between now and the end of the year, throughout the offseason and into 2018, is going to be like basically nonstop talk about everything. And tonight, to jump on the show with me in this bye week show is our friend George Bremer. George, what's going on, my guy?
Oh man, a little bit of everything, right? It's never not boring around this team. That's one thing. You can always question how well things are going or whatnot, but there is always something interesting, always something to talk about. It just feels like this season's been twice as long as any other, I think, with something new cropping up every week.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, and what, this week we've got possibly Clayton Gathers coming back. We've got, Swoop? Is Swoop coming back this week too? I hadn't talked about him in a while, even though he's, you know, well on his way back. And, you know, those are two really important additions as far as I'm concerned. I mean, we haven't had those guys yet. And to have, you know, not only with Malik Hooker being out, but, you know, you've got Matthias Farley, who is he's proving that he is, you know, well worth the roster spot for sure. Coming up big with some big hits in games, and you know he's got an interception. He's done really well all the way around. But you know, Clayton Gathers is a different animal, man. What do you think about his return? Do you think this is going to be a long period of him getting more acclimated to what's in front of him, basically, because it's been so long since he's played, and then maybe starting to get to be himself within a few weeks of actually being on the field? Or do you think he'll come back rejuvenated and kind of look like himself?
I expect this to be a process, but you know, I feel like this is one of the best stories this year, because I remember us talking over the summer and into training camp, and really neither one of us very much expected Clayton Gathers to even play this year. When you're dealing with a neck issue the way that he was, and you know that what the goals were and what the ultimate expectation was from the team and from his side, but you just knew there were so many different things that could go wrong in this process, so mm-hmm. many different ways that this could get untracked. And I think the fact that he's out there is a really great story. It's a real testament to how much he loves this game and how much he wants to be a part of this team. And I felt like anything you got from him this year was going to be pure icing. And now they're in a situation where they get to take a look at him for 6 weeks, and it could help this defense tremendously as they get ready for 2018. We've talked about this before, and I think you're on the same page as most of us here. The stats don't really show it, and there's a lot of reasons for that, and I think a lot of that has to do with some of the big plays that they've given up, especially early in the year. Mm-hmm. But this defense is improving. It feels like every time they go out there. I think you saw them take a real big step last week against the Steelers. You just look at the recent history of what Pittsburgh's been able to do against the Colts, for them to play as well against them defensively as they did on Sunday. I think you add Clayton Gathers into this, it's something they've really been missing. They don't. We talked about it before the season started. They don't mm-hmm. have another safety like him on this roster. There's nobody else who does what he does. Now, the interesting part of your question is, how long is it going to be until we see him do what he does? And he's obviously an extremely physical guy. He's an extra linebacker when he's at his best. And you wonder how long it's going to be until that physicality is evident. But he's got fresh legs. He's extremely enthusiastic about this opportunity. And I think it's, you know, sometimes you wonder with a 3-7 team, what do you have left to watch the rest of the season? And I think Clayton Gathers is a really big answer to that question.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, and like you said, we have talked about this quite a bit in the past, and not only did we think that it was possible we wouldn't see him this year, we didn't know if we'd ever see him this year or see him again because of the nature of his injury. And you know, bringing him back, I mean, how like kind of ironic is it that he's going to be coming back possibly against the Titans too? You know, that
yeah,
was who
of
his, his last hit in the NFL was against the Titans, stopping what, a third and short or a fourth and short? Something.
Fourth and short, I think.
Yeah, and he lit him up, but he lit himself up in the same thing. You were just kind of talking about it. The stats don't really tell the story. I just recently, and I don't know if I want to give this away yet, but it should be coming out tomorrow anyway. So most of the people who are listening to this on Friday are going to be reading the story on Friday anyway. So I don't think it's much of a spoiler, but you know, if you take that 72 yard touchdown and that 58 yard touchdown from Derrick Henry and TJ Yeldon, respectively, if you take those completely out and just say, give them 10 yard rushes. Okay. Instead of the huge big plays, because the Colts haven't given up that kind of big play on the ground. They have through the air this year, but not on the ground. They don't, other than those two, the biggest run they've given up was 30 yards to McKissick against Seattle. Now, if you take those two big plays, that's 130 rushing yards and two runs. Okay. Take those two and just turn them into 10 yard runs. Okay. That's a terrible average for an offensive line, but you get our defensive line. You give them just 10 yard runs from that and you improve the defensive line in the run defense significantly. It takes a big leap. Right now, the Colts have allowed 1,013 yards. I'm sorry, 1,113 yards. You take them out and give those 10-yard runs, you've got 1,003 rushing yards. If you do that, you get the Colts, who are currently 18th in the league in rush yards allowed per game. You take those out, and you have them sitting at 9th in the league.
That's amazing.
I know. And just those two plays, just those two run plays. Not only that, but you take them, and that's if you take them for, what are they, fourth in the league in yards per carry if you take those two out. I mean,
that's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many, it comes up significantly in each of them. And I mean, they're currently 13th in the league in yards per carry. You take them out, they're fourth. I mean, that's a huge jump. You know what I mean? That this team, this front line has, and like you said, the stats don't lie. They have a total of 7 sacks between all the defensive linemen. You know, so they're not a big sack-oriented team. None of them have more than 15 tackles. But they are all stopping the run. They are making plays so that other guys can make plays. And that's what really makes this defensive line. Sorry, listeners, if I stumbled through that a little bit. I was trying to make sure that I was reiterating that accurately. But it's really fascinating that they could be where they're at, which isn't terrible. They're in the middle of the league. But they could be at the top of the league or amongst the top in the league with just getting rid of that 130 rushing yards or getting rid of 110 of those rushing yards, like I said, just giving both 10-yard runs. And it's just amazing that that's where this Colts team, that's a huge jump. Even if they're sitting in the middle of the league, George, that's a huge jump from last year, every year basically other than 2014 where they were 19th in the league, and that's the best they've been under Pagano in rushing.
Yeah, No, it's really incredible, and I didn't ever even think of it in those terms. I think the passing big plays are not a big surprise. We all expected that to a certain extent. You had so much youth, so much inexperience in that secondary. You knew there were going to be some miscommunications. You knew some big plays were going to happen, and they were going to have to live with that. That goes back, you know, into the spring when guys were first signed and drafted here. And if you had told me that Quincy Wilson was going to be in the situation he's in with the injuries and the other odd things that have gone on around him, and that Malik Hooker would be out for the year before the midpoint, I don't think I would have become, and that Vontae Davis would not ever really get back to Vontae Davis and end up being cut. Mm-hmm. I don't think I would expect this secondary to be anywhere near where it's at right now. There's a lot to be hopeful for. The season that Rashawn Melvin had, he's made himself some money.
Oh,
it'll be
interesting
to see what happens with him this offseason, but he has made himself some money. You mentioned Farley earlier. I think Pierre Desir is starting to come on and show that he's a guy who deserves a spot in this league, has a role for teams. Nate Harrison's been an outstanding story as a rookie in the slot. That secondary is, it's not the best in the league. You know, I don't want to oversell it. But there's a lot of optimism with that secondary, especially when you think about Malik Hooker coming back next year and a healthy Quincy Wilson being part of this team next year.
Oh, absolutely. I love this secondary. Look, you got Desir, who's a young guy. Like you said, Wilson, you got hopefully Rashawn Melvin. I think that he's worth putting the money out for. He's played through a lot. You know, that's a guy that you want on the team. He did it a lot in camp, if I'm not mistaken, correct? Played through.
Mm-hmm,
Yeah, I mean, that's who they want. Those are the guys that they like. And not to mention, he's taken a huge leap since last year and really proved to
it's
be
incredible.
One of the more physical, better sticky and coverage guys in the league right now. And you get those guys, they're 6'2", they're long, you've got the good safeties over the top, you've got a physical one in Gethers, you've got another as a backup in Farley. I think that if you're not optimistic about the secondary, I'd like to know, you know, who you would put in their places, because the secondary looks like it's shaping up. And then if you add that defensive line, the Colts really, I think, obviously, are going to be shopping hard for a standalone starting inside linebacker next year and probably some mm-hmm. more edge help.
Yeah, absolutely. They need to upgrade. Now, that being said, Bostic's been great the last 2 weeks. I don't know where he was the first 8 weeks, but mm-hmm. the last 2 weeks he's really picked it up. And Morrison played well against Pittsburgh as well. But I think moving forward, you do need an upgrade there, and I think that's going to be an area that they're going to look at. And then obviously an edge rusher. You know, they don't have that. The thing this defense is really missing the most is that premier one-on-one sack artist. You know, that guy's not on this roster. I love what Jabal Sheard's been able to do this year and the way he's been able to impact quarterbacks and especially the running game. I think everybody is impressed and respects what John Simon's been able to do. Mm-hmm. But these are not guys that offensive coordinators are worried about how they're going to handle on Sunday. They're not guys who are going to have 12, 15, 18 sacks in a season. If you can add that player to this roster, this defense could change significantly in just the course of a year.
Yep, I totally agree. And one of the, you know, not a huge name, I don't think, but somebody that a lot of draft nicks were talking about as possibly a late-round steal. The Colts picked up Jermaine Grace, an inside linebacker, rookie out of Miami, and he was picked up off waivers off the Falcons, I believe. And I think there's a lot mm-hmm. of people that really think that, I mean, he's that slim build guy. You know, he's not the big 245 guy like Bostic. He's 223, 6'1". I mean, it kind of makes you wonder if this is finally the let's find the guy who can be the quality coverage linebacker, but also be a guy who can lay a hat on somebody. And, you know, George was kind of that guy up until then. Up until they grabbed Jermaine Grace, you know, on the team, who looked like he was more of that build at 234, but even lighter now is Jermaine Grace, but a little longer. So, I mean, it makes you wonder what Ballard and or Pagano or whoever, you know, kind of pulled the trigger on that. I would assume it was Ballard, but what they saw in him to bring him in and make them feel like he deserved to be on the roster.
Yeah, that's really interesting. That's not a guy. I mean, obviously, I'm aware of the transaction, but that wasn't a guy I knew a lot about. I wasn't really aware of the backstory there, and it's an interesting thing to look at when they come back here from the bye, because that's the coverage aspect of it is the biggest thing. And the numbers, look at what PFF has put out there throughout the year, and the numbers when opponents throw against the middle of their defense, and especially against the linebackers, are just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And if you can even take a small percentage of that away, you know, what kind of changes does that make to some of these second halves, especially some of these fourth quarters that we've seen where teams are, you know, all of a sudden even Tom Savage comes to life and starts moving his football team. If they can take away the middle of the field, can change a lot of that, I think.
I agree. What do you think that DJ White brings to the team? I mean, he was another one that was signed off of waivers. I think it was from the Chiefs there. Mm-hmm. So obviously Ballard's familiar with him. But, I mean, at 5'11", 193, they've got three guys now with Milton, Moore, and White now that are all very similar in build. But, you know, obviously Nate Hairston at 6' is the starting nickel guy. Are these guys, was this a pure, like, special teams pulled, do you think? I mean, that seems like, I mean, typically you don't see that come, you know, being signed off waivers for a special teams guy.
Yeah. No, I obviously Ballard sees something. I mean, he's a guy, like you said, he's familiar with. So there's a reason here that he wants him around, and he's always looking at competition and all those sorts of things. But my first guess would be maybe in that slot, because they don't have a lot of depth there. I know Milton is kind of a slot guy, and he hasn't had a lot of good health situations this year. He's been in and out, inconsistent with his health. And it seems like if Harrison can't go in the middle or on the inside, or even at times where they've been short on the outside because of injuries and they can't move Harrison out there, I think they want somebody else that they can move into the slot, because it feels like right now that guy's not necessarily on this roster. And maybe that's DJ White. That would be my guess.
It's kind of funny. He and Milton both went to Georgia Tech, and it looks like they graduated together, or at least were in school and played together. Both second-year guys. That's kind of funny. You don't see that too often coming from
no.
You know, hitting on the same team, being on the same secondary. When we look at this offense, we look at Brissett, George, and we see kind of, you know, his whatever you want to say, his ascension to a little more accurate, showing off the arm a little bit, more willing to go downfield early in the game. What do you think that we see from him in the last several weeks of the season? I mean, because the Colts really do have an interesting season. And I kind of punched this home after the Steelers game that it was kind of a huge loss, in my opinion. I mean, think if the Colts could have turned three of those six one loss or 3-point losses into wins. You know what I mean? Or not, I'm sorry. The ones mm-hmm. that they gave up the second half leads to. If they could have just secured three of those wins that they did that and beat the Bengals, they beat the Texans, they could have beaten the Steelers easily, as far as I'm concerned, as far as where they were at in the game. And then you then you come up against the Titans, who are good compared to the Colts as far as roster and everything, but they're still beatable. The Jaguars are definitely beatable, no matter how dominant they look one week to the next. The Bills, the Broncos, the Ravens, and the Texans. That's the end of the Colts' schedule right there. The Colts could have pulled off a fantastic run to at least made their league or their season respectable and had a possibility of making the playoffs, in my opinion.
Absolutely. I think it's funny because at the beginning of the year, and even towards the first quarter of the year or so, everyone was kind of looking at December and going, man, it's a murderer's row. Look at those defenses. You know, there was a feeling that was where the real grind of the season was going to be, and now it's night and day. I mean, these teams are all struggling to different degrees, not so much Jacksonville, but Jacksonville's inconsistent, so you know, there's still that factor for them. But you know, Buffalo's a mess right now. They just benched their starting quarterback. Denver's make Buffalo look like they're having a perfect run. Baltimore's Joe Flacco's really, really struggled this year, and obviously everyone is very familiar with the issues that Houston has with Tom Savage under center. So I think it's a totally different look, and you're right. But I think when you go back to those one-score games and those second-half leads, and they're 2-5 right now and they lead at halftime, which is just a ridiculous number, especially the way some of those games have played out. In the 110-28 in the fourth quarter, which is just almost unfathomable that number even exists. It's you hear about it all the time, and it's cliche, but it's really a huge factor in the game, and it's part of being a young team, which they are. And they talk about learning how to win, and I think that's what you're seeing with this team right now, is they're learning how to close out games, and it's a really difficult process. It's something that Andrew Luck made look really easy as a rookie, and one of the many remarkable things that he did, because it's not natural. You don't generally just come into the NFL and shine in the fourth quarter the way that he did and the way he was able to lift his teammates. I think that's what you see missing with this team. And it's not a knock on Jacoby Brissett. It's just a recognition that he's a mere mortal where Luck was kind of not when it came to those fourth quarters and even at a young age. That being said, what Brissett has done, I think it's one of the most remarkable stories in the NFL this year. You're not going to hear a lot about it because they're 3-7. And that's not to say he's a Pro Bowl caliber quarterback or anything silly like that. But when you think about what it took to get him to where he is, no summer work, no training camp, no OTAs, and then not just showing up here on the Saturday before the start of the regular season, showing up here with no connection to any of these coaches. I mean, a lot of times when you see a situation like that, well, they got him because the offensive coordinator had him in college or had him at his previous stop or the quarterback's coach, or there's somebody there on that staff that knows him, is familiar with him. He came in here blind, learned this offense, started in the second week, and you see, I think what you've seen from him in the last 3 weeks, 2 touchdowns in each game, that growth is the comfort that he's finally gaining in this system. To me, it's really remarkable what he's done. He's got flaws. There's no doubt about that. He's 23 years old, and he's got a lot to work on. But what he's been able to do, I don't know how many guys in the league could have done it.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And not only that, but the he's got, what, 6 touchdowns and 2 picks in his past in his last 3 games. And those interceptions were, in my opinion, pretty fluky. I mean, he does struggle.
Especially the last one.
Yeah, he struggles with touch. So he throws the ball, you know, Doyle's like, what, 3 feet from him, and he throws a, you know, a 50-yard bomb right through his hands. I mean, that's exaggeration, but you know what I mean. and then, you know, the one against Cincinnati where it was a tip ball up in the air, and he runs it in for a pick six. I mean, those are fairly fluky. I mean, it's not that you can't, you know, you shouldn't blame him for those. That's not what I'm saying, but they're fairly fluky. They weren't downfield passes. They weren't even out routes. You know, they were simple passes that just happened to take bad bounces. And, you know, that is what it is. But he, you know, he's come a long way in the last 3 weeks, especially, you know, the first several weeks of film review that I did on him. You know, I wouldn't say I was hard on him, but I was honest about, you know, where he's at. You know, in the first several weeks, it was, he's learning the playbook. After that, it was, okay, now you're seeing the struggles you're seeing are what you're seeing from a young quarterback, not so much a quarterback who doesn't know the system anymore. It's a quarterback who's just still struggling to get his foothold in where he's at, you know, to get used to everything around him, to get used to starting every week, getting the confidence in small windows and deep passes and relying on receivers to be where they're supposed to be and so on. And now you're starting to see a little bit of that all kind of mesh together. He's getting a lot more comfortable, obviously. He likes to throw the deep ball, and he's good at it. And he's one of the better deep ball throwers in the league right now as far as accuracy on deep balls. So, I mean, that's a good thing for the Colts to go forward with. I mean, that, I don't know how you find a better backup than Jacoby Brissett, who is showing that he has a lot of Andrew Luck tendencies. There's always a what the hell moment in an Andrew Luck quarterbacked game. There's been a few what the hell moments in Jacoby Brissett's, you know, first several games. So, I mean, and they both, you know, like I said, they both like to go down the field. They're both those big play guys, and they can both get themselves out of the pocket. They're very similarly structured, if that's not a terrible way to say it. I mean, it, obviously, no one's trying to say that Jacoby Brissett is on Andrew Luck's level, but he's definitely, you know, they're definitely like two pieces of the pie, you know what I mean, of the same kind of quarterback. They were built the same way, almost, you could say. And it's a lot of fun to watch him right now, and I'm enjoying that. I still want him to get rid of the ball quicker, but I mean, you know, like I said, this is all a part of his growth as a quarterback. Not so much anymore does he know the plays, how far is he into the playbook, etc. So I'm enjoying watching it, and I think that the team's going to be much better in the future because of it. Having two legitimate quarterbacks, I think, on the roster. How long that'll actually last, I mean, because, you know, opportunities present themselves for quarterbacks who can play in this league. And if Jacoby Brissett continues throughout the season to show that he's a legitimate starting quarterback in the NFL, somebody's going to be, there's a lot of teams with really crappy quarterbacks, George. They're going to be, somebody's going to be calling. Whether the Colts take them up on it or not, someone's going to call.
And I think that's one of the interesting things. We were talking the other day before the game, and I think I told somebody, you know, he's not a top 10 guy. And they said, no, but he's a top 32. And that makes a big difference. And he really is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's a legitimate, I think he's a legitimate starting quarterback in this league. And like you said, that's worth a lot to somebody. And I think right now the key there is that you've got Jacoby Brissett this offseason. So you don't, you worry about Luck, don't get me wrong. And it's not like, oh, you've got Jacoby Brissett, so who cares what happens to number 12? I'm not saying anything silly like that. But you do have that insurance policy that you didn't necessarily have a year ago. And so you can now hold on to Brissett for a year, bring Luck back in, make sure that he's Andrew Luck again. And then prior to the 2019 season, which would be the last of Brissett's contract, that's when maybe you can start listening to some of these phone calls. That's why it may sound a little crazy, but I would not mind seeing the Colts go after a quarterback somewhere, maybe the third, fourth, fifth rounds in the middle of this draft.
Mm-hmm.
Get somebody like maybe a Lamar Jackson who may fall, who has some ability that you can work with, and you can bring him in as the number three for next year. That'd be the idea. Let him compete. Let him learn from Luck. Let him learn from Brissett. And then if you trade Brissett prior to 2019, you've got a guy behind him who can hopefully serve as a backup for Luck moving forward.
Man, that would be crazy exciting with him being in there in Indy as well. That would be dynamic would be the word for kind of all three quarterbacks there, because there is a piece that there is some dynamic to Jacoby Brissett, even though he kind of looks like a 60-year-old man running. He does have big strides, and he does take up a lot of space, and he does gain ground quickly. So it's kind of fun to see both sides of that. And for Lamar to be in there too, that would be, you know, very interesting for sure. Guys, hang tight for a minute. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more and George Bremer here in just a moment. All right, folks, welcome back to the Colts Cast. We're back here with George Bremer. George, let's talk about this defense a little bit more. Let's talk about Terrell Basham and kind of where we expect him to go for the rest of this season and kind of, in the future as well. We saw some nice return from Hassan Ridgeway in his second year this year. We've seen some other guys come in and, you know, Antonio Morrison, even though he's not exactly where we want him to be, that's for sure, he's still better than he was last year, I think. Mathias Farley, significantly better than last year. Rashawn Melvin, better than last year. I mean, there's a bunch of guys, I think, that are better than last year. And I will take full responsibility for this. I expect more out of Terrell Basham than what he's giving right now. But I understand that as an edge rusher, as a guy who's expected to fall into coverage and a guy who's expected to set the edge and be a legitimate run defender, that he's going to need some time. But I also feel like there's such a slow process with him right now. Are you seeing something similar, or do you think that maybe he's starting to come out of his shell a little bit?
Yeah, it's such a slow burn right now with him, and I think everybody's a little bit frustrated, the coaching staff and he is himself, with that things haven't come a little bit more quickly than they have. You know, you take a third round pick, that's not really a flyer, that's a guy that you're hoping is going to be able to produce for you and have an impact, and that's the expectation when you come in. And I know that was the expectation with him. I thought the Cincinnati game was a big moment. I thought maybe we were going to see that be the start of a turnaround for him, but he really kind of disappeared again in the next 2 weeks. And I think that's where they are right now. You see moments here and there where he's the guy that they thought they got, and you see it's in there, but you just don't see it with any kind of consistency. And that's, you know, that's going to be something, I think, a big story through the offseason, because here's a guy who really needs to make the most of these last 6 weeks, and then make the most of next spring and next summer and try to take the strides. You know, part of it is he's in a really good position group, and I don't think that we expected that necessarily coming in. Like we said before, they're missing that top flight stud pass rusher, but in John Simon and Jabal Sheard and really Barkevious Mingo, you have three guys who are playing pretty well and making it hard on rookies. So I think that's part of the process too, but there's no doubt it's been a slower burn for him. And I think the same with Anthony Walker on the inside. Walker's had some injuries, the hamstring that kept bothering him, but it's it's come along, I think, more slowly than maybe the team and the players would hope.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. And I've become a fan of Barkevius Mingo. I really have, just because I think that he adds – I mean, obviously, the guy is not a dominant one-on-one pass rusher. He's not going to be elite tackles in this league. He's not even going to be elite guards in this league. But he adds a lot of – and as far as I'm concerned, he adds a lot in coverage. He's around the ball a lot, and he does nice job. He is the epitome of the guy that you need to dial up blitzes for, because he's got that speed to make the impact. He doesn't have a sack yet this year, but I really do believe that he is a guy that they could keep around for another year and be kind of, you know, not just a transition guy, but definitely a guy next year that you either hope to see significant growth out of and truly battle for a starting position, or you continue to see him be a guaranteed backup almost, and a guy who helps out on special teams, but nevertheless very good at that within that role as well. Mm-hmm. But there's a couple other guys though that I'm curious about, I know that we need to see the rest of the season from these guys, but right now heading into the bye week, what do you think, buy or sell on Dante Moncrief for 2018?
Yeah, I was really surprised when Eric Coach Venturi was high on him on the radio the other day.
Really?
And I always respect his opinion, you know, a great deal. But I really just feel like the inconsistency there, really, Dante to me has been one of the more discouraging parts of this season, because people get on T.Y. Hilton a lot for disappearing and all the other things that he's talked about. You look at the production of this wide receiver core right now, every receiver whose last name is not Hilton combined going into last week, and Chester Rogers helped it out a bit with a big game against the Steelers, they were about 200 yards behind him on the season. And that's a spot that, you know, Dante Moncrief at this point in his career, you should see a lot more plays like you saw on the 60-yard touchdown against Pittsburgh. And it's just not there. You know, there's a big play here. There's a big play in Seattle where you go, yeah, that's what we think he's capable of. You're not seeing that on first down. You're not seeing that on second down. You're not seeing it consistently throughout a game. I might be mistaken. I think that was his only catch Sunday, the touchdown.
His only target.
His only target, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm selling right now because I just feel like everybody sees the potential. That's part of why it's so disappointing. Everybody knows the package that he has there and understands what he theoretically capable of, but I just think at this point in his career, and I realize he's incredibly young. I think he's the same age as Jacoby Brissett, so that gives you some idea, 23. But and maybe that's where Coach Venturi's coming from, the fact that, you know, the speed's there, the size is there, and he's only 23 years old, but he just really has not taken that step forward at a time when they really need him. You need somebody to keep defenses honest, to take some of that attention away from T.Y. Hilton. And really, Moncrief got beat out by Kamar Aiken, and I think he's on the verge of, if it hasn't already happened, being beaten out by Chester Rogers.
Mm-hmm.
And that just shouldn't be happening this far into his career.
I agree. And I'm on the fence about him. I'm not a hard buy or a hard sell, but there's definitely reasons for both. Like, and right now, and kind of the point you're making is the majority of the positive for the buy is all on potential, and the few, you know, flashes you've seen this year, the red zone threat that he proved to be last year. We just don't know what Dante Moncrief is. And that is the thing, I guess, if Chris Ballard and the Colts feel like they do, and then they have to decide, is that the kind of guy that they're going to move forward with at the receiver position? Cause like you said, I mean, Aiken is not going to beat him out, I don't think, any further. But Chester Rogers, you know, a guy who came into the season as the number three, has, I mean, obviously looked the part this past Sunday against the Steelers. But he's also been that guy all through. I mean, if you watched any of his offseason workouts, he was killing it. And I just think that he's got a bright star, and he's going to be shining pretty soon for the Colts. And I think that we may see a lot of good things from him the rest of the season. I honestly hope to see that from Moncrief as well. But we don't know. As of right now, I think I'm a sell. but I'm not a hard sell. You know what I'm saying? Because that potential is real. And the Colts going to go what with a draft pick or something like that as a wide receiver. I mean, we can't draft every position. We say this every year in the offseason, you know.
Yeah.
Hey, we need this too, but we can't draft all of them. You know, we've only got so many draft picks. But, yeah, I think that most of his is all on potential. But I'll be honest with you, I don't think that I'd be upset either way because I would understand the argument for either move, quite honestly. How about Frank Gore?
You know what? Frank is such an interesting situation because I spent most of the year thinking this is the last year that Frank Gore is going to be in Indianapolis Colts, as I think most people did.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still probably the highest percentage that he's not back. But the last few weeks, and really just the way that you see the way that he is in the locker room, the way that he deals with his teammates, the way that he's taken Marlon Mack under his wing and trying to teach him some of the tricks of the trade, he's a very, very, very usable piece. And I know he's 34 and about to be 35. And in running back years, he might as well be 90. But right. It just seems like he's so professional in what he does. And he works so hard at his craft. And, you know, the numbers are not great. Everybody knows that. When you look at him on paper this year, it's nothing to get excited about. But when you watch him run, there's still a lot of life in him. You know, I think you see him running hard. You see him running, I think, faster than he was a year ago. And I just think he's one of those guys that if he wants to come back, and that's a big question mark too, although, you know, this is what I feel worse about for Frank Gore. He's made no bones about the fact that he came here to play with Andrew Luck. That's why he wanted to be in Indianapolis. He thought he had a chance to play with this young quarterback who's a franchise guy, a really special guy, and he's barely gotten the opportunity to do that. Even last year when they were together for most of the season, as we know fully well now, Luck was hurt the whole time. He really has not had a chance to play with Andrew Luck, and I think there's a little bit of a interesting aspect to that of, you know, hey, what would happen if he came back, had a fully healthy season with Luck, and with the idea that Mac's role would increase, because again, like you said, you can't draft every position, you know, right. you can't replace everybody. So I think at this point in time, I don't know what they're going to do, but I would probably be in favor of bringing him back for another year and allowing him to kind of be that guide for Marlon Mack again, taking a lesser role even than he's had this year. But I think there's just so much he can offer on the field and more importantly off the field for this team that I just wouldn't write him off right now.
Yep. And I feel very similar in this. And here's the thing for me. I even feel the same about it if they draft another running back. If you draft mm-hmm. another running back and you got first or second round guy and you think that might be, you know, one of the cogs in the tandem between the new Mac and whoever this guy is for the future. What? Yeah, I just don't. I mean, I don't know what you're gonna sign him as far as you know, contract wise with Gore. But
that'd be a big question.
Yeah, if you get him at a reasonable price, and Gore looks and says, "Look, I got two running backs that are here with me. By God, we better have Luck next year, all set and ready to go. You know, so I've got Luck." We've got a new refurbished, you know, maybe an offensive line. We've got more pieces on defense. This could be a good year for me to really try to just make this the last year. I'll play, you know, where I'm at and finish my career. I would have no problem keeping him, even with two other backs, especially with Mac and like another drafted back or something like that. Because Gorgeous, I mean, it was something I noticed Sunday too. He really and legitimately seems to get better towards the end of the season.
And he does.
I think that he has a playoff body or a playoff mm-hmm. Skill set. Like, it's like, okay, he's just not great. He's okay. He's who he is at his age in the first half of the season. But the second half of the season, it's like this switch gets flipped, and he is, you know, I'm going to get 4.5 yards every carry. I'm going to dive. He's got great vision. And he just, yep. There's just things you can't teach a guy like that. And there isn't anybody in the backfield right now that has those kind of tangible features with their running style like Gore does. Mac is a fantastic talent for the future. He doesn't have any of that right now, as far as I'm concerned. He did make some guys miss in the backfield this past week, and it does seem like the defense is getting back there to force him to make a move behind the line of scrimmage a lot, which is weird, and I don't really understand why they're shooting through on him. But Gore has the uncanny ability, before he's even got the ball, sometimes to make a move and get a miss. So I have no problem with bringing Gore back whatsoever.
Yeah, it's really, like I said, it's really weird. Because going into the year, I would have laughed at that idea. Like, I just thought, he's 34 and it's run its course here. And now, I just think he's such a good role model to have around, too. And I don't think that can be undervalued on this team. This is a really young locker room and a really inexperienced locker room. And Gore is one of those guys that holds people accountable, that is a veteran in that room and a voice that you need. And I think all those things together, his work ethic, and then what he, because none of that matters if he can't help you on the field.
Right.
But then what he can do on the field on top of that, you have to wonder too. And this honestly is why he came. But you just have to wonder, what if he was on that 2014 team that played in New England, how much of a difference does he make on that football team? You know, in the playoffs, it's just what you're talking about. His ability in the postseason to carry the football, and it could have changed things tremendously.
I agree.
For that team.
I definitely agree. Let's zip through a couple more here. What about Darius Butler? I'd say no.
Yeah, you know, Darius is a great guy. He's perfect in the locker room. The media loves him because he's always available, and he always says something really intelligent and good to say, but I don't know where he fits anymore, to be honest. You bring back a healthy Hooker and a healthy Gathers, and Farley's plays the way he's played, I don't know where Darius Butler's role would be.
Right. And then that's basically what I'm basing it on. He's as hard a worker as anybody on that team. There just isn't a spot for him anymore, I don't think, quite honestly, especially if you want the team to get legitimately better. He would bring maybe some consistency to his game. But he's a liability in a lot of different areas to where the younger guys wouldn't be. Scott Tolzien, obviously, I think is gone. Brandon Williams, I would even say, is probably gone. That would take a few more 30-year-olds and 30-plus off of this roster. I don't think Aiken's back. There's a few other guys that are kind of inconsequential, like Mike Pearson and whatnot. But I think that when you get to the higher parts of this roster and age, I think that a lot of that turnover is coming, although guys, you know, like Marcus Hunt, I think that there's a spot for him. I mean, a guy who can just tear it up on special teams, whether it's field goal or be able to get – because I think his pressure percentage is like 11.9, and for no more snaps than he gets defensively, man, he is effective. And he's effective getting to the quarterback and disrupting the backfield and getting his hands up in passing lanes. And that's something that the Colts have really gotten a lot better at this year, is batting balls down, I think. And that's something – I mean, on third down, that's every bit as good as a sack, as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely. I think – it's an underrated part of this team this year has been what a good job Chris Ballard did in bringing in defensive free agents. I mean, he didn't bring in anybody necessarily who's going to light the world on fire, but they all had a role and they've all played that role. And whether it's Hunt, whether it's Mingo, whether it's Al Woods, who's been a monster inside, Hankins has done his job remarkably well this year. Simon and Sheard, you know, we've talked about them and what they've added to this team. That's, you know, on the whole, that's a pretty good haul of defensive free agents. And it's, I think that the view of this defense and the view of this team as a whole, and it's kind of an obvious statement, but I think it would be so different if Andrew Luck was healthy, because I think this defense was built to take the ball away, which they've done quite often, and did against Ben Roethlisberger for the first time since 2013 on Sunday.
Yep.
But, you know, it's not as effective when your offense is in the 30s, the high 20s, in the 30s, in the ranking than it would be if you had a quarterback who was experienced and at the level that Luck is and taking advantage of that. And I think the entire view of the defense would be completely different if Andrew Luck was here complementing that defense. They were built to complement him in his high-powered offense. And when that wasn't what was taking place, well, not a defense that can carry this team.
Yeah, I agree. And I was thinking about it the other day. I was thinking about writing something about it. And I just really wanted to gather a lot more thoughts about it so that it wasn't something where I was trying to create a narrative but either way. But I'm trying to figure out, as we've all seen Luck's first few years, we've seen his downsides. We've seen his ups and downs, like I said. Mm-hmm. And it really makes me wonder, does with this group, like we mentioned, the what the hell throws that Luck has every so once a game, it seems like. Is he somebody who still, after these surgeries, after having some down years, having a bad year in 2015, but then you get the opposite side of that, where in 2016 he was still hurt but played tremendously. And does Luck really make that big of a difference in 2018 for this Colts team, in your opinion?
That's going to be the real question, because I think everybody's asking, will he play? And, we still don't have an answer to that, and we won't for a little while yet. I still think that the expectation from the team is that will happen, but the expectation was he would play this year. So you got to balance that out. And obviously the things that are going on with his throwing shoulder are highly concerning things. It's something that is not going to be answered anytime quickly. I think we're going to get a pretty good idea of how things are progressing with the coaching search that everyone expects to see in January, because I would think any potential coach is going to want to know everything he can about Luck's situation. And I think you're going to kind of see from the quality of coach that's interested, just what the league view is of where Luck is at and what his future is like. But I think the bigger question than will he play is how will he play?
Mm-hmm.
And it's such a tough thing to answer, because you've seen guys like Drew Brees come back and do things that no one thought was possible, with his shoulder afterwards. And you've seen other guys that never, ever really looked the same again. And my feeling is Luck has a cerebral enough aspect to his game that he can adjust to whatever's going on. I think that's why he was able to play as well as he was last year when he was injured, because he's not at the Manning level of that, where he can completely control a defense with his mind. Manning was a Jedi in that regard, and I don't know if anyone's ever going to match that. But I think Andrew is thoughtful enough, understands the game enough that he can make it just. In fact, from a lot of what I've heard, that's part of what's wrong with his shoulder now, is that he was making adjustments to his mechanics and making adjustments to the way he played the game, and it injured other parts of the shoulder while he was playing through the injury. So that's part of, from what I've heard, that's part of what's going on now, is that, those adjustments mattered. And I think that you're going to see the same thing from him now. The question is, how much patience will there be with that process? Not just from the fan base and from the new coaching staff, as we expect to see, but from a general manager who's really, a lot of what this team's going to do in the next 3 to 5 years, obviously, is on Andrew Luck. So Ballard has shown already in his short time here, he's not a sentimental guy. He's not going to be one of these guys that says, well, he could be this, or, he could do that. And I'm not saying by any stretch of imagination he wants to get rid of Andrew Luck. That's not the case.
Right.
But I wonder how understanding he's going to be if Luck doesn't look like Luck. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I feel like he's going to be an action kind of a guy. So, would he be quicker to go down to, and I don't know how involved he is in these things, so it's really dangerous kind of speculation on my part right now, but would he be quicker to go down to a coach and say, hey, let's get Brissett in there? He's just not himself right now. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And I don't know how that would affect Andrew. So it's really a bunch of hypotheticals that I'm throwing out there right now. But I guess it's all to say that if I had to place my money on anybody, I'm going to put it on Andrew Luck, because I think he's going to do the most important stuff. He's going to put the work in. We all know that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's going to make the adjustments that he needs to make to be successful with whatever it is that he's dealing with. You know, I think he's that kind of quarterback. Now, he's still going to see, he's still going to be Andrew Luck. He's still going to throw into quadruple coverage because he's just is certain he can get it done.
Right.
He's still going to throw a ball with three defenders hanging on him. I don't think you're ever going to coach that out of him, because the problem is one out of every six times he makes that play.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, but I my gut feeling is that you're going to see still a good version of it, but I think it's going to take time. I don't know how he couldn't be rusty. Even if he throws in April, even if he's ready on day one of OTAs, he's going to be learning a new system in all likelihood with a new staff. I would think the offense looks a little bit different, in all honesty, because I think there's more that needs to happen on the offensive side of the ball than needs to happen on the defensive side of the ball. And I never thought I would say that as far as personnel changes go.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're going to see more added to that offense. So he's probably going to be adjusting to new teammates, new coaches, new system, and new mechanics and a new arm, you know, for all sakes, for all intents and purposes, a new shoulder. And I think there's going to be a learning curve there. It's just a matter of how long that is. I don't know. We've seen the guy do things that are not mortal before. I mean, his rookie year is not something that should happen.
Right.
That's not the way things go. So I guess I lean on that to think that you'll probably see him overcome it. But it would not surprise me if he gets off to a slow start. In fact, I expect that.
Yep, me too. And I kind of had that feeling, even if he had come back this year. You know, people were like, well, as soon as Luck comes back, you know, the Colts are good. I'm like, not so much, not necessarily. I mean, he really has to get back in the groove. And even practices aren't going to do that, as far as I'm concerned. He would have probably had a couple weeks where he would have been rusty or sloppy or, you know, similar to how he was last year in training camp with Brian Schottenheimer, brand new quarterbacks coach. We saw a lot of his balls floating. We saw his footwork different, his eye movement, everything about him, his mechanics were a little different. And you could, in the first few practices, you saw a lot of balls floating or a lot of balls, you know, zipping over high. And then in the couple practices later, we saw that pinpoint accuracy, and it started coming around. And I think that should be expected when he does come back, like you said, whether it's you know, in training camp, first day of OTAs, whatever it is, you know, he's going to have some time where he really has to get used to it, and he's going to have to get better. I think that a lot of what he brings is going to be fantastic, but I worry more than anything as far as wondering. I know what he can do. We all know what he can do, but you wonder with everything that's happened, all the time he's missed, what's going on, whatever is going on with his injury, does it not lend him back to being the guy that he was? And we just don't know that. And that's something that I think that Colts fans should realistically temper their expectations for when he does come back. Because
I think 100%.
Yeah. What are we going to do? I mean, can you imagine the freaking streets are going to be full of pissed off people at Jim Irsay if they have legitimately wasted his entire career and got three good years out of him? That would be would be probably the worst NFL moment of all time. I wonder how ugly that could get if that actually happens. Now, that is gloom and doom at its worst right there. So I mean, but we just don't know. That's I guess the point.
It's a legitimate question.
Right, exactly. It is something that needs to be asked. And you know, Will Carroll was on with me the other day, and he was talking about, you know, the one thing that continues to make him feel like they've botched was the fact that they didn't get Andrew Luck in front of the media to have him talk at all, except for when they brought him back. And
yeah,
now you've got all this.
Odd.
It is odd. You've got this guy coming back. Now he's gone on IR, and we've heard Andrew Luck talk exactly once. Is that right? I mean, am I missing
another
one?
Twice?
Is it twice?
I think twice. He did it both weeks that he was practicing. And a lot of that's Andrew, to be honest. It's just kind of his nature. I think that he doesn't really want to mislead anybody, and he doesn't. So if he's in a situation where he doesn't have a lot new to bring to the table, he's not gonna want to talk. He's not going to want to be out there and be in front of it. I think that's why you haven't heard him recently, because, well, part of it's because he's in Europe now.
Right.
But, I think even before that, it's just the idea that what was he going to say other than, you know, we're focused on rehab and the things that were already said. But that being said, I think that's the manager side of it. I think that's the nature of his personality and the reasons why he doesn't necessarily want to talk. That being said, I think there was something to be gained in fan relations and just sort of making everybody feel a little more confident, a little more comfortable, and having him come out and talk, even if what he said wasn't much of anything. I think it would have been well received. And you know, from what we hear, when Chris Ballard was doing his media tour there last week, I guess it was, maybe the week before, there's a possibility that we will hear from him towards the end of the year, maybe at the end of the year. Mm-hmm. And I think that will be a big step. But honestly, at this point, it almost doesn't matter.
Right.
Just because I don't think anything he says, I feel like people have their minds made up to a certain degree. You either are in the camp where you think that he's going to be back and you're hopeful and you're optimistic about next April and next season, or you're in the camp that his career's done and it's over and, you know, doom and gloom completely. And there's definitely lots of shades of gray in between there that I don't think people are really recognizing or even wanting to recognize that we just talked about. But I honestly, it doesn't matter what he says. I don't think he changed in either one of those groups' minds. The people that think he's done are going to think he's done no matter what is said between now and next September. And, you know, short of him coming out and saying, I retire, the people that are optimistic are going to be optimic during that stretch too. So,
right.
I do want to hear from him because it's my job, obviously.
Yeah.
And I think the fans want to hear from him, but I don't really know what kind of difference it's going to make, if that makes sense.
No, I don't think that it's going to make hardly any sense at all, difference at all, to be quite honest with you. But it would have, you know, with all the rumors that were going around, that was kind of, as far as I'm concerned, that's more of when you want him to come out like, look, everybody just chill, you know, we're good here. Things aren't going great with my shoulder, but we're good here. You know what I mean? I mean, that little bit of that would have been a calming effect for the fan base, as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely. And I think that's what he needs to do if he talks at the end of the year, honestly.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, because that's going to be asked. I mean, somebody's going to say, how is your relationship with the Colts right now? And no matter what he says, he can't just go, you know, the typical Andrew Luck, oh, God, I mean, we're good, you know, everything's okay. You know, he's got to be like, look, we're good. And he has to say it with confidence. You know, it can't be a typical Andrew Luck answer. It's got to be, we are good here. Don't worry about that. Everything's fine. We're waiting on my shoulder, and once that's good, you'll see me out there, and we'll be out. I mean, because the speculation is killing people with a new general manager, Jim Irsay. Everybody's feeling like he's meddling more and more into things that he has no business meddling in, as far as for his mental state, I would assume. And you know, then you've got just a host of other stuff. They've got, you know, the crap with Chuck Pagano. You know, there's a very good chance he's not the coach next year, and you know, people are wanting to talk about this or that and what Chuck's got and who's coming in and are they going to bring somebody else in the front office to help? And it's just rumors are running rampant. Obviously, you can't eat eat every single rumor. I mean, that just isn't going to happen. But you can take care of the one that involves your franchise quarterback that everybody thinks should be around for the next 10 years.
Yeah, absolutely. And I honestly don't buy into the trouble with the franchise stuff at all, because for one thing, just the pure work that he's putting in, he wouldn't be doing that. You know, if he was angry, I know you got to get back and you're going to worry about your own personal health from that standpoint, but the way that he's working and the effort that he's putting into this, that's not a guy who doesn't want to be here anymore.
Right.
You know, it's a guy who's, I honestly believe he's committed to this team and to his teammates. He tried to say that, I think, during the first time that we got him, right before he started practicing again. But you're right. You're not going to – it was in that typical Andrew Luck way, in that sort of blowing off the, you know, like, why would you even ask that question? And I think it needs to be a more forceful, a more specific answer from him, you know, that gets people kind of feeling that way. I think a lot's been made of the Irsay 4 inches between your ears comment.
I think that's
more
stupid
than probably is there.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think that that's driving most of this, honestly. I think what what Irsay was trying to say, and it's always extremely dangerous when I try to interpret Jim Irsay. But I think what he was trying to say is that every injury, there's a mental component, that that's a part of it. And I think it's kind of a little bit addressing what we were talking about a few minutes ago, and just that, how is he going to handle the new mechanics? How is he going to handle the new environment? I think that's what he meant, because even if he had come back in September, it wasn't going to be the same. Now, we're talking about some major changes possibly next September, but if he had been back week two this season, there were going to be mental challenges. There were going to be different mechanics, different situations that he was going to have to adjust to. And like you said, there was probably going to be some rust. There was going to be a period there where he didn't look like Andrew Luck. And I think that's all that Jim Irsay was really addressing with the 4 inches between the ears comment. I really do.
Oh, I do too. And I honestly think anybody's a complete idiot if they think otherwise. I mean, what do you really? Mm-hmm. It just doesn't compete with me that somebody would legitimately even think that was an issue. Like, oh my God, 4 inches. Well, what? Who cares? You know what he meant. I mean, nobody's ever accused Jim Irsay of being the most articulate guy in the world. You know, give the dude a break, for God's sakes. You know, I mean, he you knew what he meant. Let's not. I mean, the senseless, like, clickbaity crap off of it. It was really ridiculous, I thought. And everything that's basically followed with it. I mean, everybody knows that's part of it, especially as a quarterback. You've got to have the physical and the mental's every bit as important. And especially when you're coming back from an injury, you have to have the confidence in that arm. And that is what as far as I'm concerned, that's what he meant more, as much or more than anything, was the confidence part of it. Not like simple smarts, you know, I mean, I just,
And that's honestly the part that we can't answer. I think that's, like you said, to me, that's a scary thing moving forward, because nobody knows that. Not even Andrew Luck knows that. You know, how long is it going to take him to feel confident, to feel like, you've seen that a little bit with Jacoby Brissett and his growth this year. And it's a totally different situation, but it's the same theory and the same idea with Luck next year. He's going to have to learn to trust that shoulder, and he's going to have to learn to trust the new offensive line and new coaches, you know, whatever else isn't around him. And that's a process. There's no doubt about it. That's a process. And it, you know, how long it takes is going to be one of the biggest stories of next year, assuming he's out there, as everybody's kind of hopeful will be the case. You know, I can definitely see myself next year and in week two, week three, week four, writing about how that's coming along. Why is this not happening quicker? You know, I think those are going to be the kind of things that we're discussing.
I absolutely agree. George, we're sitting at an hour, man. It never seems to last that long while we're talking, but I'm looking at it now and we're about an hour and 5 minutes. So I'm going to let the listeners get a break from us here for the next few days, and I'll be off until Monday. I'll have a show. It could be Tuesday. I haven't really made up my mind yet, but I think that we'll probably keep the same schedule moving forward, as we will moving into week 12 against the Tennessee Titans, who just got smoked, by the way, by the Steelers. So that's, you know, something that we have to look forward to, a team coming back off of this, like, kind of a mini by themselves almost, with a Thursday game. So that's going to be an interesting matchup, I think. But the Colts have it at home this time. I think that the Colts have an honest opportunity to win that game. I think they do. But, well, you know, that'll all be something that we'll have to decide on then. But, George, thank you so much for your time, man.
Yeah, you know, I've been busy this year, and I wanted to make sure I could get in when I could. And hopefully I can be back at the end of the year, if not, hopefully before.
Absolutely. Always a great conversation. We have no timetable on George's return to the Colts cast right now, but he is the host of the Horseshoes and Hand Grenades podcast, and that is a fantastic listen. So make sure you guys are getting out there, subscribing on iTunes for that as well. As the Colts cast, and anywhere you guys do, give him a rating and review. Those always help. George is one of the best in the business and always a blast to talk to. And I know that you guys love listening to what he has to say. So help your man George out with all that. But George, you are the man. Thanks for your time tonight, brother.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Colts fans, we'll talk to you guys all next week right here on the Colts cast.